Live from New York, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to learn about how New Zealand black currants are good for your brain, how exercise when we're young allows us to have a lowered risk of death later, keeping calm and carrying on for the sake of your long-term health, Penn State University. We're going to talk about drinking when a woman is pregnant, boost the risk of the baby being a diabetic, University of Queensland. We also have the New Zealand Institute for Plant and Food Research today and how red grapes, a chemical in them, can help prevent bowel cancer, University of Leicester, and a lot more on than healing. Then we're going to look at something that the public needs to know, that the CDC, as official policy behind the scenes, has engaged in criminal activity. I'm asking that the lawyers in this audience, and we have a lot, begin to look at class action lawsuits, because there are millions of victims. I'm asking all the different vaccine advocacy groups to look carefully at what we're going to present. I have a new documentary that we've been working on that unequivocally will destroy any pro-vaccine argument with good science from independent scientists, all of whom were pro-vaccine. Here's just the latest information to show that everything, and I mean every argument they're using to say that there's no connection between vaccines and autism is a lie. They're basing it upon the CDC and studies done by Dr. William Thompson and his team. And from that, it gets circulated in a motion. It goes through think tanks and front groups for the pro-vaccine. It gets into the mainstream media as if this was original journalism. So therefore, when someone comes forward with evidence, like a parent, that their kid was completely normal till they received a series of vaccines, and those vaccines ended up causing the damage to the child's behavior, they'll say, well, it's not true. Officially, the CDC shows that there is no evidence. Today, we will show you actual verbatim transcript statements from inside the CDC on the record, showing that they are committing crimes against humanity and therefore are not protected from identification, not when you commit a crime and it's proven. So I'm asking for the class action lawsuits and discovery to start. Also today, we were all told that we're not spying on you. Yes, you were. This is from USA Today, Brad Heath. U.S. secretly tracked billions of calls for decades. Also, not today, but on my next program, I won't have time today, I'll show you how the head of the National Security Agency lied and said that there was no evidence that they could find the location of the 9/11 bombers. Not true. Who says not true? Three people, whistleblowers who work for the National Security Agency, which means that people within the United States government, for whatever their motives, and I don't know their motives, but they prevented the CIA and the FBI and the National Security Agency from arresting the terrorists who are in the United States. They not only had all their phone calls, including calls to Osama bin Laden in Afghanistan, they could have stopped it. They didn't. This is a new piece to the puzzle. My guest in the second part of our program today is Nick Bryant. Nick is a really terrific journalist, investigative reporter, and he's been writing on the plight of disadvantaged children for a long time. His writings have appeared in professional publications, such as the Journal of Professional Ethics, the Journal of Applied Developmental Psychology, the Journal of Social Distress, and the publication of Social Health. He co-authored America's Children, Triumph of Tragedy, that dealt with the mental health problems of lower socioeconomic children. He also authored The Franklin Scandal, the story of power brokers, child abuse, and betrayal that exposes a nationwide pedophile ring that the mainstream media refused to touch. Well, we're going to talk about the British pedophile scandal that went clear up to the highest levels of government, to the highest levels. No one was excluded. Every group of power brokers were included. For 35 years, they managed to keep this hidden. No investigation was able to go forward, even though there was a substantial evidence. Well, now there are pedophiles scandals breaking around the globe. So we're going to show you just how much destruction these people did to innocent people, and because the people they were preying upon came from foster homes, they had no belief, so nobody would believe them. Who are you going to believe? The office of the Prime Minister of England or an orphan? So now it shows those orphans were telling the truth. We'll show you how corrupt our government is, how different presidential administrations were involved. You won't want to miss this discussion today. Let's begin. Most of the time when people are faced with a crisis or a challenge to their ego, their beliefs, their values, their security, they overreact. It is limbic. It's reptilian. It is defensive. It is assertive. It is destructive. According to Penn State University, quote, reacting positively to stressful situations may play a key role in long-term health. In a study measuring adults' reactions to stress and how it affects their bodies, researchers found that adults who fail to maintain positive moods, such as cheerfulness or calm when faced with the minor stressors of everyday life, appear to have elevated levels of inflammation. Furthermore, women can be at a heightened risk. Now, this audience knows that inflammatory responses are part of the body's ability to protect itself and the immune system. However, that's short-term. That's short-term. We're talking about chronic, which means so you just can't give it up. You can't let it go. You can't let the past be the past. You can't bury it. You keep dragging it with you, resuscitating your arguments, the emotions behind the arguments, your justifications, how you're a victim, someone else is to blame. True or not, what you're doing is you're keeping your body's immune system on full alert and full alarm and reacting. That in turn causes inflammation. Inflammation to your heart, inflammation to your cells, to your brain. That can prematurely age you, will, and cause heart disease, cancers, and other conditions. So put it in its simplest form. Inappropriate responses to life, meaning trying to always look at something as a drama, to add to the story of your drama, you're killing yourself. So in effect, you're creating a karma. You're just not going to like what it is. So learn to let stuff go. Your life is more important than the arguments, the disagreements, but that in itself will not work for most people. My personal experience of counseling tens of thousands of people is that the number one crisis we face in the United States is a lack of authentic interpersonal identity and aligning it with our true purpose in life. Everyone is skilled. Everyone succeeds at different things. Everyone masters things. Some people become extraordinarily successful and helping other people, but that doesn't mean that they've been living an authentic life. And it's only at the end of life that people take the time for deep introspection because they have no more room for excuses, and they just be around someone who is dying and see what they regret. And the number one thing that I've heard so many times, I wished I'd have lived an authentic life. I did the best I could with the life that I was told to live, conditioned to live, trained to live, and lived. It just wasn't mine. That should be a reminder. You can keep calm if you feel comfortable in your own skin, if you don't come from insecurity. But if you come from insecurity, fear of abandonment, where you need people to love you, accept you, be in your life, you'll never, ever have the right relationship because it won't exist. Anything that doesn't constantly make you feel connected will be a reaction to feel disconnected, in which hence out comes the blame, the anger. All society is this or this and that. It's always someone else to blame. You never look in the mirror and say, stop, just stop. Look at what has happened. What role have you played in it? Me? I'm a victim. No, you're not a victim. We are all, at different times in our life, faced with circumstances or people or conditions that we feel helpless or abused or in some way used. But we're also fully capable of responding. It just depends upon whether or not we have appropriate responses to correct imbalances or inappropriate responses. Inappropriate responses, you're killing yourself. Appropriate responses, you turn off inflammation. You live a longer life and you're healthier. This article was published in Health Psychology. Separately, very important is the whole idea that people don't exercise enough, and especially kids today. Have you noticed how many parents actually have their kids who are 4 and 5 and in those little rollers? They roll them around. Why? You should have kids as early as possible out and running and walking and playing, using their muscles. Vanderbilt University Epidemiological Center, an article published in Cancer Epidemiology, Biomarkers and Prevention, shows that exercise during adolescence linked to lower risk of death later. And that's so important. Get your kids exercising. Go to places where you can walk, even if it's a mile or 2 or 3. Don't drive them everywhere. Get them out of the chairs, off the couches, away from the desks. There should be only 1 hour a day, in my opinion, where people are allowed to use the internet or cell phones or television. That's it. The rest of the day, they have to engage in things that are actually constructive. Those are not. And then we wouldn't have an epidemic of obesity. We're the fattest nation on earth. We are extremely fat. So what do? When we get this fat, we make it a new status symbol. We make a person $100 million for having a fat ass. It's just stupid. Really stupid. Black currants. Good for your brain. From the New Zealand Institute for Plant and Food Research. The research conducted by scientists in collaboration with another university found that when you take black currants into your body, and by the way, black currants are small. We actually grow them in the United States. They're generally available in the fall. They're extremely powerful, and they're good for your brain. They're good for the chemicals in your brain. They're good if you suffer from a neurodegenerative symptom like Parkinson's, mood disorders, stress, and anxiety. Quote, this is from the study. This study is the first to look at the effects of berry consumption on cognitive performance of healthy young adults. Our previous research has suggested that compounds found in certain berry fruit may act like monoamine oxidase inhibitors, similar to a class of pharmaceuticals commonly used in the treatment of both mood disorders and neurodegenerative disease like Parkinson's. This research has shown that New Zealand-grown black currants not only increase mental performance, but also reduce the activity of monoamine oxidases. End quote. that was published in the Journal of Functional Foods. Now, you don't have to have New Zealand black currants. Black currants, and I'm quite sure there's not a big difference between New Zealand and American black currants. And you can get them dried year-round, and you can get black currant concentrate. In fact, in my refrigerator, I have black currant concentrate, bilberry concentrate, pomegranate. I have about 10 different concentrates. And in making my smoothie in the morning, I put a teaspoon of each one in there. So it's not expensive, really packed with power. Drinking at conception boosts diabetes risk for baby. This is the University of Queensland, which is in Australia. Babies conceived by women who drink alcohol around the time of conception face dramatically increased risk of type 2 diabetes and obesity. And so that's why I've suggested many times that people take at least 2 years before conception and deal with their emotional issues. Remember, any emotional issue you have not dealt with is going to be epigenetically programmed right into your child. So if you're insecure, if you have any mood distemper, if you're reactive, that's what you're giving your kid. So deal with the emotional issues of life. Deal with the physical. Detoxify. It takes about, realistically, if you want to do it right, you're looking at 2 years consistently to cleanse, detoxify, naturally chelate out heavy metals, toxins, rejuvenate, repair tissue, and then conceive, because then you're really building the healthy, vibrant child with good energy. If any part of that is missing, your child unfortunately has to pay. And this is what they said, quote, the discovery was made by School of Biomedical Sciences and during the research into how events, particularly alcohol consumption, before and during pregnancy affects long-term health of the offspring. And that's where they said, quote, before the egg implants, before any organs start to develop, alcohol consumption somehow causes changes in the embryo. Anything that affects fetal development can cause long-term programming, which means offspring can be born with increased risk and susceptibility to diseases later in life. So that's important. And finally, red grape, a chemical in the red grapes, can help prevent bowel cancer. And this is the University of Leicester in the United Kingdom. Quote, resveratrol, a chemical found in red grapes, is more effective in preventing bowel cancer in this particular study published in Translational Medicine. So you can look at high dose or low dose. And for most people, even low dose is good, especially for bowel cancer. I'm Gary Noll. That's the latest on health and healing. We're going to take a little break and come back. We have a lot to share with you. Please stay with us. Welcome, all of you. Nice to have you with us today. I appreciate the people who are listening all over the world. And if you're in North America and Canada, which is part of North America, you can listen over the telephone anytime at noon to 1 Eastern Standard Time for the live broadcast over the any kind of portable listening device at 712-432-7231. Just write it down and keep it with you. 712-432-7231. 1-800-273-1. Now, as many people in this audience know, there's an enormous movement going on right now. It's not over yet in California. There will be lawsuits. There will be an appeal. There will be an effort to expose the people who got money beyond what is required in the state of California, and we have thousands of people listening now in California. Check your own laws. Any legislator that receives more than $250 cannot then advocate on behalf of people giving them money or gifts or anything valued at more than $250. And yet, almost all of the legislators who voted in support of mandatory vaccines were receiving large amounts of money from the vaccine manufacturers, the specific vaccines like the Gardasil vaccine that would be part of the mandated vaccines. Now, I never tell someone to vaccinate or not vaccinate. It's their business. If someone could show me good evidence as a scientist, I want to see the evidence that a vaccine is safe for any given person and effective, then I would absolutely be pro-vaccine. There'd be no reason not to. It'd be irresponsible. But until such time that I see that evidence, and I have not, I've seen just the contrary, as have all the toxicologists, immunologists I have spoken with. They say that when they look deeply at the research, it was grossly flawed, biased, and corrupt. So, here is one more piece of the puzzle. This is from Cheryl Atkinson, CDC scientist, quote, listen carefully to this, please. We scheduled a meeting to destroy the vaccine autism study documents. Let me repeat that. We scheduled a meeting to destroy vaccine autism study documents. Now, this is a grounds in and of itself for not just a congressional investigation, but also the Attorney General of the United States and a special prosecutor. This is also the grounds for victims of vaccine-induced injuries, including autism. You're dealing with over 1 million right there, to launch massive lawsuits, sue the hell out of the government. These people do not deserve your respect or trust. I can show you at least 20 instances that I will be documenting in my new documentary where the CDC has lied, manipulated the data, and used humans as guinea pigs, not the least of which is the Tuskegee experiment. Here's what Cheryl Atkinson says, quote, a current CDC senior scientist has made an unprecedented admission. He and his colleague says, committed scientific misconduct to cover up a meaningful link between vaccines and autism in black boys. Just as startling, the CDC scientist, Dr. William Thompson, says the study co-authors, here's what we didn't know, quote, scheduled a meeting to destroy the documents related to the study. The remaining four co-authors all met and brought a big garbage can into the meeting room and reviewed and went through all the hard copy documents that we had thought we should discard and put them in a huge garbage bag, end quote. Now, the co-authors brought a big garbage bag into the meeting room, all right, and put the documents in a huge garbage can, and that was according to the head scientist, CDC senior scientist, Dr. William Thompson. Now, despite this whistleblowing testimony, which Dr. Thompson provided to Representative Bill Posey, Republican of Florida, there's little chance of a meaningful hearing or investigation. In an untainted news environment, the allegations would make headlines in most legitimate publications and would trigger federal inquiries. However, the interests of the powerful pharmaceutical industry reach deeply into Congress and the news media through lobbyists, propaganda, and advertising dollars. The omitted data suggested that African-American males who received the MMR vaccine before the age of 36 months were at increased risk for autism, so says senior scientist Dr. William Thompson. Now, that's why Congressional Posey resorted to simply reading some of Dr. Thompson's statements today, that was yesterday, onto the House floor, including the part in which Dr. Thompson says he retained the evidence that had been thrown in the garbage can in the unlikely event that a neutral investigation or scientific body would like to see it today. That we didn't know. That's good news. That's great news. It means that Dr. Thompson has the evidence, hard evidence, at hand, the one that all of his co-conspirators believed had been destroyed, that the CDC hierarchy, clear up to the top person, believed had been destroyed. So, quote, because I assumed it was illegal and would violate both the Freedom of Information Act and the Department of Justice request, I kept hard copies of all documents in my office, and I retain all associated computer files. That was a quote on the congressional record by Representative Posey. The CDC and Thompson's co-author, Dr. Frank DiStefano, the CDC Director of Immunization Safety, have defended the controversial study as originally published. Well, they don't have the documents. The congressman does, and of course Dr. Thompson does. So for all you lawyers, get him under deposition and discovery, and you will have your case. Quote, this is Representative Posse's entire statement about Dr. Thompson. Quote, I rise today on matters of scientific integrity and research. To begin with, I am absolutely, resolutely pro-vaccine. Advancements in medical immunization have saved countless and greatly benefited public health. That being said, it's troubling to me that in a recent Senate hearing on childhood vaccinations, it was never mentioned that our government has paid out over $3 billion through a vaccine injury compensation program for children who have been injured by vaccinations. Regardless of the subject matter, parents making decisions about their children's health deserves to have the best information available to them. They should be able to count on federal agencies to tell them the truth. For these reasons, I bring the following matter to the House floor. In August of 2014, Dr. William Thompson, a senior scientist at the CDC, worked with a whistleblower attorney to provide my office with documents related to a 2004 CDC study that examined the possibility of a relationship between the mumps, measles, rubella vaccine, and autism. In a statement released in August 2014, Dr. Thompson stated, quote, I regret that my co-authors and I omitted statistically significant information in our 2004 article published in the Journal of Pediatrics. Mr. Speaker, I respectfully request the following excerpts from the statement written by Dr. Thompson be entered into the official record. Now quoting Dr. Thompson, quote, my primary job duties while working in the immunization safety branch from 2000 to 2006 were to later co-lead three major vaccine safety studies, the MADDSP, MMR autism case-controlled study was being carried out in response to the Wakefield Lancet study that suggested an association between the MMR vaccine and autism-like health outcome. There were several major concerns among scientists and consumer advocates outside the CDC in the fall of 2000 regarding the execution of the Verostratin study. One of the important goals was determined up front in the spring of 2001, before any of these studies started, was to have all three protocols vetted outside of the CDC prior to the start of the analysis, so consumer advocates could not claim that they were presenting analysis that suited our own goals and biases. We hypothesized that if we found statistically significant effects of either 18 or 36-month thresholds, we could conclude that vaccinating children early with the MMR vaccine could lead to autism-like characteristics or features. We all finalized the study, protocol, and analysis plan. The goal was not to deviate from the analysis plan to avoid the debacle that occurred with the Verostratin thimerosal study published in Pediatrics 2003. At the September 5th meeting, we discussed in detail how to code race for both the sample and the birth certificate sample. At the bottom of Table 7, it also shows that for the non-birth certificate sample, the adjusted race effect statistically significant was huge. All authors and I met and decided something between August and September 2002 not to report any race effects from the paper. Sometime soon after the meeting, we decided to exclude reporting any race effects. The co-authors scheduled a meeting to destroy the documents related to the study. The remaining four co-authors all met, brought a big garbage bag into the meeting room, and reviewed and went through all the hard copy documents that we had thought we should discard and put them into a huge garbage can. However, because I assumed it was illegal and would violate both the Freedom of Information Act and Department of Justice requests, I kept hard copies of all documents in my office. I retained all associated computer files. I believe my intentionally withheld controversial findings from the final draft of the pediatrics paper. Mr. Speaker, I believe it is our duty to ensure that the documents that Dr. Thompson are not ignored. Therefore, I will provide them to members of Congress and the House Committee upon request. Considering the nature of the whistleblower documents, as well as the involvement of the CDC, a hearing and thorough investigation is warranted. So I ask, Mr. Speaker, I implore my colleagues on appropriations committees to please, please take such action, end quote. Well, first of all, thank you, Representative Posse, for bringing this to our attention. And for Dr. Thompson, who engaged in a criminal action and betrayed the American public, you have turned a corner, acknowledged your guilt, acknowledged your culpability, acknowledged your defects of character, and that is for the public to decide about forgiveness. What should we do at this moment? First and foremost, for the entire African-American community, this is extraordinarily racist. The same racist organization that did the Tuskegee experiment, that then did experiments on black inmates, that then did experiments with anthrax and botulism vaccines on service personnel, a majority of those documents, 70,000 documents, were in African-Americans, and who have done live experiments unknowns to the people without their consent, they have once again played their race card. I would like to see members of the progressive African-American community hold rallies, bring lawsuits, and demand an investigation. I also believe that all of you pro-vaccine scientists and advocates, that you should ponder this with scholarship and real details. We have eviscerated, we have destroyed your pro-vaccine arguments. I hope that you will come on this program and debate me, just me. I don't need anyone else to reveal the truth. I've done it in four now documentaries, 34 articles, and over 15,000 hours of research. And if you feel uncomfortable coming, bring a couple friends with you. All right? Because truth on the side of one is still a majority. To the people on Pacifica stations, I will not say shame on you, because you bear no shame. You don't identify anything you do other than what's in your interest. To The Nation magazine, to Mother Jones, for the seven people who still read these publications, why don't you try doing some homework before you blather up to the pro-vaccine position? A little scholarship on these health issues would be in order, and then apologize for having been wrong and put people at risk. But you don't talk with the people whose children have been destroyed. You don't look in the eyes of children who see nothing that we see because of the injury to the vaccine. You do not talk with the parents who mourn their teenage healthy daughters who died or permanently injured from Gardasil, a worthless, completely fraudulent vaccine. You don't investigate by speaking with the developer, Dr. Harper of the Gardasil, or all the other actual scientists who are not for hire, are not whores to the pharmaceutical industry, who will tell you the truth. It's time the American public showed that they had the courage to stand up to corruption within the media, especially on the left. We know how corrupt the right is. And call them out. I open this forum to take on all comers. You're pro-vaccine. I'll give you an opportunity and you'll be treated with the same respect all of my guests are. But I can promise you, you're not going to get any saying softball from me like you would on the mainstream media that I refuse to watch. I refuse to turn on the television to watch any of the blathering idiots on NBC, ABC, CNN. The worst of the worst is on CNN, Fox, MSNBC. They're just a disgrace to journalism, a disgrace. And now Pacifica can join them. And by the way, on Monday's program, is it possible that there is a conspiracy underway by people high up in the Pacifica Foundation to bankrupt WBAI? I'll share what I know at that time. Back in a moment with my guest. Please stay with us. To welcome all of you from around the world who are listening now. We are the number one listened to radio program in the world for progressive minds. We are not liberal. I want to make real clear that there's a big-ass difference between the pathetic liberal establishment as it exists now, the corporate liberals, the Democrats who are corporatized, and true progressives who look for the truth wherever it is. One of those progressive journalists is on the line now, Nick Bryan. I gave you his background, a journalist, investigative reporter, a writer for some peer-reviewed journals, including the Journal of Professional Ethics, and he cares about children. He cares about children in such a way that he's not afraid to go after the truth no matter who it embarrasses. We're going to talk about the British pedophile scandal and the sex lives of politicians and political elites and why they have betrayed the youngest and most vulnerable, those who have no power, those who have no fame, money, or connections, and hence the cover-ups have been epidemic. He's here to pull back the curtain. Nice to have you with us, Nick.
It's good to be with you, Gary.
Since the release of your book on the Franklin scandal, which exposed a prostitution ring of younger boys and girls serving Washington officials and insiders, there has been several releases of similar sex scandals associated with political elites. Most recent was Jeffrey Epstein's network of younger girls hired out to the wealthy and powerful. Henry Vinson, who became a successful procurer for the gay escort serving Washington's VIP, including many in George H. Bush's circle, business executives, socialites, recently co-authored a book on that scandal. And a recent documentary by Amy Berg called An Open Secret, and there is the Westminster pedophile ring involving hundreds of children that was covered up by the Thatcher government, she personally. And what is so insidious is that all of these scandals involve elected officials and people close to them who the public places their trust in, and evidently morals and higher values hold no essential place in the high levels of a government when there are cover-ups and a preference to push these sex crimes under the rug in order to protect the rich and powerful. If it were any other citizen, all of these political and business clients in these sex service schemes would be behind bars and permanently listed as sex offenders. But because their status and the protection of the state, they remain free from the courts except in rare circumstances when an offender can serve as a fall guy in order to protect others more powerful. I'd like to begin with the Westminster scandal because this goes to the highest levels of the British House of Lords, was systematically covered up by the British government, and now we learned intelligence also, including Thatcher's spy chief for M15, Sir Anthony Duff, was involved. And unfortunately, many of the parliamentarians and British celebrities and elite who were clients and operatives within the pedophile rings are dead today and can't be brought to justice. But others are very old now. One MP, Cyril Smith, had over 140 predatory complaints filed against him. Nevertheless, explained to us exactly how large an operation these pedophile scandal engaged in, and what was the nature of the operation, how many of the British elite were involved, and is there any evidence American elite were also involved, participated in the sexual abuse of boys and girls? Take your time. The forum is yours.
Well, Gary, when you talk about what's going on with the Westminster pedophile network that's being uncovered currently, it truly does reach to the highest levels of the British government. And actually, there was an article in the Daily Mail where a high-ranking secretary said that that there were people in our positions in the British political parties that actually knew about their colleagues preying on children, and it was kept in a black book. So their colleagues could be leveraged and blackmailed when needed. And you also see the same phenomena occurring in the United States with the Franklin scandal, the book that I wrote about an interstate pedophile network. So I think, and in both circumstances, and also with the book that I just co-authored, DC Madam, you see the same thing, the blackmailing of politicians. And actually, I think to be a blackmailed politician, to engage in heinous acts or even acts that are blackmailable is actually an asset to your career. You see people that have these tasks rise up through the political food chain with and some meteorically. Dennis Hastert, the former Speaker of the House, is one who was abusing children in Illinois where he was a high school teacher. And yet he ended up to be the longest reigning Republican Speaker of the House in the history of the United States. For 7 years, he was constitutionally the third most powerful man in the United States of America. And yet he'd been molesting children when he was a high school teacher decades earlier. So he had those skeletons in his closet, but yet he still rose to be the third most powerful man in the United States of America.
All right, let's go back again for a moment. I'm concerned about the parliamentarian pedophile ring because when I was over in England, I've been to England dozens of times, I would hear from my sources there that there was a major sexual cover-up going back decades, over 35 years, and the same group of people had been engaged. The government knew they were engaged. Scotland Yard knew they were engaged. MI5 knew they were engaged, this was equivalent to our FBI, and yet they were too powerful to be prosecuted. And I'm thinking, but what about the victims? And the answer was, they're not powerful enough to be concerned about. And I said, that's a terrible thought. Tell us about how vast a network this was, how many people were engaged, because just in the last year or two, was that very famous broadcaster or two television personalities who were found to have been serial offenders for decades, and the BBC knew it.
Gary, that network was huge. And there was a book called The Pedophile Information Exchange that these people were apparently gleaning children from that had been around for decades. So in the case of the UK pedophile network, or the Westminster pedophile network, as it's being called now, you basically have institutional endemic child abuse that goes back decades, not just to the 1980s, but it goes back further. And Cyril Smith, there's actually a book out about him now that I've read, and he was a serial predator who just skated through his life without any problems whatsoever. And what you see here is analogous to what you see in other countries. I've studied this phenomena, and I've written about this phenomena, is institutionalized, endemic, basically state sponsored or state-sanctioned child abuse. And I know that that might sound very unpleasant to a number of your listeners, but essentially what you have in the United States and what you have in the UK, what I've written about, is essentially state-sanctioned or state-sponsored child sexual abuse.
I want to now focus upon the United States. Let's reverse it. Let's start with Jeffrey Epstein, a billionaire, a major liberal Democrat who went to prison, but for a very short period of time. And talk about him, then go back to your research that no media wanted to touch, where you couldn't get anyone interviewed, and yet you introduced us to an older woman, an older man now, who were kids at the time in Boys Town, the very famous institution that was, you know, with Spencer Tracy and Mickey, I think it was Mickey Rooney, were in that movie about Boys Town, and how that was a recruiting place, and everyone involved knew. And then these people were taken to Washington, D.C. to be the sexual objects and raped and brutalized by these Washington elite. Tell us that part of the story.
Well, with Jeffrey Epstein, you have a very affluent Democrat who has connections to the highest levels of the Democratic Party. Bill Clinton, I published Jeffrey Epstein's Black Book in a Gawker article earlier this year, and I demonstrated that that Black Book was just kind of mind-boggling with the people that were in it. He has 22 contact numbers for Bill Clinton, has his personal email, and also a number of very, very powerful Democrats in addition to Bill Clinton. And Jeffrey Epstein flew girls all over, and I actually acquired flight receipts that show there are very powerful men on Jeffrey Epstein's planes with basically unidentified women. And I'm sure that some of them were minors. And certainly Bill Clinton flew with Jeffrey Epstein, and he was on the same plane with two women that procured minors for Epstein and his cronies. So that's pretty damning of Bill Clinton. And what happened with Jeffrey Epstein is the Palm Beach Police Department launched an investigation into him, and they came across five victims, and then they were able to get corroborating statements from a number of witnesses. And they wanted to throw the book at Jeffrey Epstein, put him in prison for the rest of his life, if not the rest of his life, for quite some time. And that case was taken away from the Palm Beach Police Department and actually given to a Florida grand jury. And the grand juries are notorious for subverting justice. And they didn't indict Jeffrey Epstein on a single count of child abuse. Ultimately, the feds came in, and I have emails between an assistant U.S. attorney and one of Jeffrey Epstein's attorneys discussing how they can get the most lenient deal for Jeffrey Epstein. And he did not go to prison. He actually spent 13 months in a county jail, and he was allowed to go out during the day. And since then, he has settled over 30 molestation lawsuits, over 30. So you basically have scores of girls getting molested by Jeffrey Epstein and his cronies. And Jeffrey Epstein does 13 months in a county jail. And the women and all the perpetrators that were involved with Jeffrey Epstein were given federal immunity. I mean, I've got the document that our Department of Justice gave Jeffrey Epstein the people that procured victims for Jeffrey Epstein and the perpetrators were given federal immunity from Epstein's crimes with minors. It's that case is quite mind-boggling. Your listeners can Google Nick Bryant and Gawker if they want to look at the two articles that I wrote for Gawker that include the flight and also the Black Book.
Also, we know that Bill Clinton had so many affairs when he was in Arkansas, even before he got to Washington, that they had a whole group of Hillary's colleagues come in and called the Bimbo Brigade or something like that, that would go out and find these women and make sure that they didn't talk with the media. Plus, we have him on tape talking with Jennifer Flowers when she was recording him about covering up their 13-year affair or something like that. And yet none of this seems to matter to those who like the guy. And if you lack a moral balance, if you betray your wife, you betray your family, you betray people, then that shows you have a gross defect in character. Why should we believe you're not going to be defective in any other choice you should make in life? And in Rwanda, it was defective. The Yugoslav, the Balkanization program, it was defective. The bombing campaign in Iraq and the sanctions that killed led to 500,000 children's deaths, unnecessary deaths, that was defective. The passing GATT, the World Trade Organization, NAFTA, that was defective, getting rid of the Glass-Steagall. There's a litany of 150 different things this man did that anyone with a true sense of moral compass would not have done. And yet there's a big, big screen there, and we're seeing all these things, and we're told, oh, don't worry about that. He's a good person. No, if you're doing all these things, you're not a good person. You have a gross defect, and you shouldn't be the most powerful person in the world. Your thoughts?
Well, Bill Clinton has, and I know that this might sound very unappealing to a number of your listeners, has a history of serial rape, dating back to his days as an Oxford scholar, and or a Rhodes scholar at Oxford. There's documentation that he started raping women at that point in his life. And there is a really amazing article written by Capitol Hill Blue, which actually got scrubbed from their website, that delineates a number of Clinton's rapes over the years. And he never completed his Rhodes Scholarship program, and it's speculated he never completed it because he raped one or more women and was actually booted out of the Rhodes Scholarship program. That's not proven, but it's definitely been shown that he did rape at least one woman when he was a Rhodes Scholar. So, yes, Bill Clinton is a very unsavory individual. And when I saw that he had hooked up with Jeffrey Epstein, and if you look at the black book of Jeffrey Epstein, as I said earlier, he's got like over like 20 contact numbers for Bill Clinton. I mean, it's obvious that Bill Clinton and Jeffrey Epstein had a lot of communication going between them.
Tell us about the Franklin scandals, the media's not wanting to touch it, and why, if it had gone public, it would have caused an enormous embarrassment to very powerful people in Washington, D.C.
Well, the Franklin scandal is a book that I spent 7 years researching. I spent 7 years and traveled 40,000 miles researching it. And it was about a transcontinental pedophile network that provided children to various power brokers around the world, around the country. And it definitely provided kids to Washington elite. And it was exquisitely covered up by a state grand jury and a federal grand jury, the Department of Justice and the FBI. And the FBI came in and got the kids to recant. I mean, we're talking kids that have come from very dysfunctional backgrounds and have minimal self-esteem. What happens if you're a child and you end up with predators like the predators that I've written about over the years, you generally come from a lower socioeconomic background, dysfunctional family. You're pandered out at a very young age. And the Franklin Network, the youngest victim I talked to said he was 11 when he was recruited at Boys Town to be pandered at. And what happens is these kids, they're molested and then they're given drugs. I mean, that's the carrot for these kids. They're given drugs and money. And ultimately, when they get to be, when they lose their youthful marketability, they're kind of expunged by the network. So what you have essentially is a drug addict with very low self-esteem, and then they go on to commit crimes and thereby compromise their own credibility. But what's amazing about the book that I wrote is that there was a girl that refused to recant her abuse, refused. And Kangaroo Court found her guilty of perjury, and she was indicted on 8 counts of perjury by a state grand jury and 8 counts of perjury by a federal grand jury. and the state grant, a state court gave her 9 to 15 years. A 21-year-old girl was indicted, and when she was 22, she was sentenced between 9 and 15 years in prison for refusing to recant her abuse, and she spent almost 2 years in solitary confinement. And her brother died under very mysterious circumstances. So ultimately, this cover-up was quite amazing because you had a number of the media get involved in covering this up. This was so explicitly covered up that it took a number of years for me to get people to be willing to talk about it, because there were some very unfortunate, untimely deaths associated with this network. And it pandered mostly young boys to Republicans, but it did pander some girls also. And from the research that I've done, it looks like Democrats are fond of young girls and Republicans are generally fond of young boys. That's kind of, unfortunately, the conclusion that I've come to with the research that I've done, because the Franklin network that I discussed in the Franklin scandal was primarily run by Republican power brokers, and it was pandering young boys to other Republicans.
But there's one, we're out of time, Nick, but there's one thing that bothers me. From the top, Margaret Thatcher's top spy chief, to the top people at Scotland Yard, to the top people in the House of Commons and Parliament, to the people in the White House and Congress here, the Speaker of the House, the third most powerful person in the United States, and the top business people doing business, they end up getting away with it. Where if the average person were caught doing any of this, they would be excoriated and be registered as a sex offender. And I believe that this is wrong and that there should be major investigations. The fact that a woman who was raped, the woman who was sexually abused, and then testified but would not recant, then was sent to prison, that's something that is unconscionable. I spoke with that woman. And her story is compelling, and she could take a lie detector test and show that she wasn't lying. But that's how powerful these people in positions of power, they can reach anyone, and they can reach prosecutors who are opportunists. They can stick a hand into the heart of truth and squeeze the life out of it. Your final thought?
Well, what I've seen in my investigation is that people in the judiciary and in law enforcement that have helped to cover up child abuse by powerful people invariably are upwardly mobile in the government. And that's what it's kind of mind-boggling about this, that people that cover this up are rewarded. And that's what's truly unfortunate about this is...
Because you have blackmail. You have blackmail.
Yes.
Also, let's remember there's another person, the Home Secretary, the former Home Secretary of the United Kingdom, Leon Britton, was also accused of multiple rape, child rape. And you have even our own FBI saw an association of the pedophile ring to Tony Blair's government. So this goes on. And by the way, we didn't even mention today, because we didn't have time, of sexual abuse of in many of the Middle Eastern nations of young girls. And it's just, it's a worldwide epidemic. A young boys, it's just a worldwide scourge of the lowest of the low. I want to thank you for your investigative reporting and your ability to deal with this as you have in a very professional way. Nick Bryant, author of America's Children, Triumph of Tragedy, thank you very much for being with us.
Okay, Gary. Have a great day.
I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more on the next program. Have a nice day.
Anyone who ever loved, look at me and know that I love you. Anyone who ever dreamed could look at me.